I think there's a great opportunity to really empower those idea generators, those innovators and thinkers, to be able to start and grow their businesses, commercialize their ideas in the climate space or any other.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable healthcare.
In this episode, co-chair of the Biden-Harris transition team and Biden's director of the White House Office of Public Engagement, Congressman Cedric Richmond, joins us for introductory remarks. Governor Gina Raimondo, President-elect Biden's nominee for Secretary of Commerce, and Isabel Guzman, his nominee for Small Business Administrator, talk with Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck of Washington and answer questions from business leaders on economic recovery, racial and gender equity, healthcare, helping rural America, and climate change. Both nominees discussed how the COVID-19 crisis has impacted small businesses across the country and their plans to help business leaders build back better. This briefing was part of a series of briefings Business Forward and our partner, Small Business for America's Future, will conduct with President-elect Biden's nominees for critical economic, climate, and healthcare posts. We hope you enjoy the conversation.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Rhett Buttle with the Small Business for America's Future team. The Business Forward team and our team are so happy to work together to host this very important conversation with Congressman Richmond, Governor Gina Raimondo, and Isabel Guzman. This is a series of briefings with the President-elect's agency nominees that we hope to give small business leaders and business owners like you a seat at the table to share what's most important to you. We've asked the governor and Isabel to discuss their confirmation process and President-elect Biden's vision for the Commerce Department and the Small Business Administration. We're also pleased to have Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck of Washington to join us today to moderate the conversation. With that, it's my pleasure to turn the conversation over to the Congressman. Please take it away.
Hey, thank you for that. Let me just welcome everybody. I just wanted to make sure that I was a part of this because our Office of Public Engagement is going to be serious about relationships and getting input. And so most times a lot of people will just solicit people for output, but we want your input and we want to have an ongoing relationship and dialogue about policies and about what this White House is doing. And the President-elect and the Vice President-elect is very serious about building back better. And I think that everybody heard that in his words, tone, and everything last night. And I think he has set the stage for us to be clear about his four pillars that he really is focused on. And that's, of course, climate, COVID, the economy, and breaking down systematic racism. And what he really wants to be is a transformative president that empowers people to reach their full potential. And that's the easiest way to sum it up. So with that in mind, let me just introduce two outstanding people who are going to lead a big part of the portfolio to accomplish the president-elect's agenda and his goals. And that's Isabel Guzman, who's going to lead the Small Business Association, who is an outstanding and experienced person. And I've talked to her personally and know exactly what she brings to the table. A wealth of knowledge, very thoughtful, but more importantly, a person that is very passionate about helping small businesses flourish. And then we have Governor Raimondo, who's going to lead the Commerce Department. And I think that her reputation speaks for itself and that she is going to lead this department and lead the administration and country in the right direction. And she will be guided by, of course, the president's agenda, but more importantly, her values and her experience. So it is an awesome team. And I love the fact that the person who is moderating today, the Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck, is a dear friend of mine. I am so happy to see him where he is. And with that, I'm going to turn it over and again say that the Office of Public Engagement looks forward to working with you all. And I hope you get as excited about these two nominees as I am. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Congressman. You've already done a number of events and you guys have been so outward facing during the transition. We're super excited to continue this partnership as you guys take over and especially during the first 100 days. With that, it's my pleasure to invite the governor to join the conversation. And when the governor is done, we'll also hear from Director Guzman. Governor?
Good afternoon, everybody. And thank you, so much for inviting me to participate in this discussion. And thank you, Congressman Richman, and thank you all of you for being here. I would say it is, of course, my honor to be President-elect Biden's nominee for Commerce Secretary. I'll give you a couple of minutes about me, because as Cedric said, at the end of the day, this is about values. I'm a Rhode Islander through and through. I've served as the governor for the past 6 years, but I was born here and grew up here. And I came from a manufacturing family. Manufacturing is a predominant business in Rhode Island, as it is in many states in America. Grew up that way, and then went off to college and grad school and law school to pursue my own dream. My dream was to start my own business, which I did and ran successfully for about 10 or 11 years. Until I answered a call to service and ran for Rhode Island State Treasurer in 2010, and then for governor in 2014. I ran for governor for the primary reason to help improve the business climate in Rhode Island and help people get back to work. At the time I ran for governor in 2014, Rhode Island had the highest unemployment rate in the country. And what that meant is a lot of businesses, small businesses, family businesses, like the ones on this call, were really, really struggling. And so I put my back into getting Rhode Islanders back to work. And it was working. Prior to COVID, we had the lowest unemployment rate in decades. Here's what I know being a governor. Being a governor is a wonderful opportunity to be with businesses, people, small businesses, family-owned businesses in the community. And I have seen how they've struggled during COVID, many barely getting by, some not getting by. And I have tried my best as governor to lean in to provide support. I will do the same as Commerce Secretary, and it is a priority, obviously, of the president-elect. But what you can have in me is someone who has business experience, will always have an open ear to your needs, your very practical needs, which I know are important to small businesses. I want to hear from you. I want to listen to you. And I want to do what I can to help make it a bit easier, to help you get back on your feet post-COVID, and to help you grow and prosper. I also know from being a governor how important small businesses are in the community. And so in addition to the fact that the majority of Americans work for small business and you're the backbone of our American economy, you're also the backbones of our communities. And so for all of those reasons, I'm thrilled to partner with you, work with you, help you to get back on your feet post-COVID, but really to thrive as we go forward.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Governor. And now Director Guzman.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon or morning if you're on the West Coast with me. Thank you, Cedric, for the kind intro, and Congressman, and thank you, Jim and Rhett, for giving us this opportunity to really hear from the small business community as well. As a product of and lifelong advocate for small businesses, I'm excited to be here with this group and be nominated by the President-elect for the Administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration. As I've shared before, I grew up in a small business. I loved being at my dad's clinic. Initially, it was really just being in awe as a child of his interaction with his clients, how much they loved him, how much they connected, as so many small businesses do with their clients. So I was all in from a young age. And as I grew older and could actually help, I saw the other side of it. I saw how challenging it was to have his full day 100% focused on treating animals and working with their owners, and then have to work during his lunches and into the evenings and weekends to keep up on compliance, working with suppliers, placing orders, the whole gamut of the responsibilities of every small business owner. And I remember his large briefcase coming home every night full of paperwork. You know, every small business owner needs a team, and it was just him until he could grow and expand his staff. And I think we have an opportunity always to support small business owners as their extended team and community. So growing up, seeing that, I mean, you can't help but come to appreciate and respect, you know, that tenacity, the hard work that it takes to start and grow a small business. And that's really why I chose that career path that has allowed me to help small businesses in many different ways. I have partnered to start businesses, and I have helped entrepreneurs launch and grow their firms, including advising a startup minority-owned commercial bank that served Latino-owned businesses, and founding a consulting consulting firm that helped small business contractors. Working at SBA under the Obama administration, I was able to really see how the power of those federal programs could really help thousands of entrepreneurs like my dad, like the many businesses I've come across in my life. So I was honored to be asked to serve again at the state level as the lead on small business and innovative startups for the fifth largest economy in the world as the California Small Business Advocate. And as Governor Raimondo said, as you all experience every day, we are in the depths of a challenging economic and health crisis with COVID-19, and states and locals on the front line are dealing with this as well as the small businesses, especially those owned by people of color, who have really been challenged by this crisis, and they need strong leadership from the federal government to help them through. So I am deeply honored by the president-elect's nomination, and if confirmed, I will be very committed to work immediately with the incredible mission-driven civil servants at the SBA to help America's small business owners build better futures for their families and their communities. So thanks again for this opportunity to talk with you all today, and I'm looking forward to the discussion moderated by Lieutenant Governor Denny Heck.
So let's get right into it. Thank you, Director Guzman, very much. Again, my name is Denny Heck, and it is my privilege and pleasure to advance some questions that have been given to me on behalf of the membership of Business Forward. Thank you so much for the opportunity to participate. Let's get right to it. The first question comes from, and I apologize in advance if I mispronounce anybody's name, Muriel Burgoyne from Washington, D.C. has a question for you, Governor, and it is as follows. How will you draw upon the resources of the U.S. Department of Commerce's Economic Development Administration, commonly known as EDA, to help communities recover from the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic?
So first of all, thank you for the question. It's a great question. EDA is an area that I plan to lean into significantly, should I be confirmed as Commerce Secretary, because I believe it has a vital role to play, exactly as you said, in the building back better post-COVID. EDA provides vital grants in the community all across America to help businesses. I can tell you from my experience as governor, working with my own Commerce Secretary here locally, we've benefited from any number of EDA grants and initiatives that are very tangible and provide meaningful impact for small businesses and communities. Similarly, I would say the Minority Business Development Agency within Commerce is similar. There are EDA offices all across the country. I think they will continue to be robust and actively managed should I become Commerce Secretary. And the same for minority businesses. Too many businesses are struggling. And I know that President-elect Biden has spoken about this. He's a supporter of local economic development and manufacturing and small business. So long story short, I have big plans for EDA. It's an agency that we have used significantly in Rhode Island in my time here. I've seen its impact in our community. It's real and it's tangible. The grants make a big difference. So I look forward to really engaging.
Thank you, Governor. Your reference to underserved communities makes for a nice segue to this question, which has been offered by Dafina Williams from Silver Spring, Maryland. And it is directed at you, Director Guzman. How will the Biden administration work to reorient the SBA to focus more clearly on the needs of marginalized and underserved small businesses throughout its suite of programs?
Thank you so much for the question. And it is a passion of mine and something I've leaned into in California as well. We do need an even playing field so that entrepreneurs, regardless of race or gender backgrounds or wherever part of the country you're in, can succeed. So women and people of color are starting businesses at high rates, as we know, yet systemic challenges have been a barrier for these entrepreneurs as well as rural parts of the country. And so we often need a greater access to marketplaces and to capital for these communities. And that has to be a focus so that we can overcome some of those historic barriers. Um, I
I re-entered public service for that commitment to make California's economy work for all. Really, an entrepreneurial ecosystem, strengthen capital access to really help the small businesses either start or grow. So I look forward to bringing that commitment to the Small Business Administration, if confirmed. And I would look forward to as well partnering with the network of local communities and providers who I think are so critical to making sure that there's connection to these resources, authentic connection. I think it's one of the focus areas of my career. It's a passion area, and I know that it's not only that, but a critical part to helping our economy recover because of these high rates of entrepreneurship we're seeing in these communities.
Thank you. Claudia Vayak of San Francisco asked, in effect, a question that might be an extension of attention to those who are underserved, this specifically as it relates to women. And so for both of you, starting with you, Governor, the question is, what are your priorities and how will they benefit women who have been especially adversely impacted during the pandemic? First, Governor Raimondo, and then Director Guzman.
Thank you for the question. This is something that looms large in my mind and in my priorities. The facts are quite clear that women have borne a disproportionate brunt in COVID, laid off in greater numbers, struggling with burdens of keeping the family together, educating children at home. And we need to be real about that challenge and do everything we can as an administration to address the needs of women. And I know that I'm very excited to join this administration for many reasons, but back to Cedric's point about values, I absolutely share President-elect Biden's values in this regard. He has an excellent plan in the Build Back Better plan as it relates to the care economy, which is disproportionately women, and as it relates to equity, a deep commitment to equity. So look, there's no one answer to this, and I will be brief. We have dual challenges, which is COVID and the economy. Women struggle disproportionately now due to COVID. Some of it is, getting kids back to school. The president-elect has been very clear about that. Others of it is investing in job training to help women maybe who've lost a job or who need to gain more skills to get a higher wage job. I can tell you as governor, I have a clear record in this regard. We rolled out an initiative a few months ago called Back to Work Rhode Island, where we used our COVID stimulus monies. It's a job training initiative for people who've been put out of work by COVID. And I'm very proud to say the majority of people, we located, trained, and put back to work over 7,000 people in just a few months, the majority of whom were women in Rhode Island. And we made that a priority because it's women who are, as I say, disproportionately struggling. So in any event, I see it. I live it here in Rhode Island, hearing from women and small business women every day. And it'll continue to be front and center for me and the administration as we build back post-COVID.
Before I ask Director Guzman the same question, I want to ask a follow-up of you, Governor. Obviously, the data is pretty stark about people who are the last absorbed into the workforce are the first removed, and that it takes a disproportionate amount of time for them then to begin to reabsorb into the workforce. Do I take it from your remarks that you think the most important thing that could happen in that regard is workforce training programs?
I think it's incredibly important. If it's not the number one most important, it's right at the top. So I agree with you. It's crystal clear in the data. It's also crystal clear in the data that our economy is changing. My kids tell me I'm old. I don't think I'm that old. I'm 49. I got out of high school in 1989. In 1989 in Rhode Island, the majority of jobs available did not require anything past high school. So I picked 1989 because it's when I was getting out of high school. It was still possible at that time, and I'm not old, to get a decent job with just the high school degree. Since the Great Recession, the vast majority of jobs that have been created in America that are decent paying, nearly all of them require some credential or degree past high school. COVID has incredibly accelerated that trend because, you know, we saw changes in brick and mortar retail. That was an industry struggling and declining. COVID has precipitated that decline. Put yourself in the shoes of a woman who's 55 years old and has been a store clerk at a big retail shop for 20 years and now finds yourself out of work due to COVID and only have a high school degree. We need to be there for her with effective, relevant job training matched up with the job at the end of the job training. The world is undergoing a digital revolution, a data revolution. Jobs that pay require skills. And yeah, absolutely. You can tell I have passion around this because I've seen it work. People want to work hard, but we got to help them have the skills required to get jobs. By the way, small businesses need this too, because I know a lot of, particularly prior to COVID, when small businesses were thriving, the rate limiting factor to growth is talent. You can only grow as fast as you can hire the people you need to do the job. So job training, yes, I think is at the top of the list. It helps workers, quite frankly, it helps businesses so they can grow with the talent they need.
Thank you, Governor. Director Guzman, same question. Obviously, the Small Business Administration should have a profoundly important role in this regard. What are your thoughts or plans about how to direct assistance or be involved in ensuring that women who have been disproportionately impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic are able to recover?
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks, Claudia, for the question. I had the pleasure of working with her at the national level on capital access issues when she led CAMEO, and then again in the state of California around women's issues. So I completely agree with so many of the points of Governor Raimondo in terms of the importance of women, of us recognizing that the impact that women entrepreneurs have had during COVID. I mean, I've seen small business owners juggling childcare and trying to run their business at the same time, and it's impactful. And not only that, but because of the job loss issue, just as in previous recessions, we're going to see an increasing necessity entrepreneurship out there for a lot of our women that drove that high rate of startup activity. And so it's more important than ever that we really face some of the barriers to opportunity that women entrepreneurs face to make sure that they can succeed and that our economy as a result can recover equitably. SBA has some incredible programs, including women's business centers, as well as government contracting set-asides and others. If confirmed, I look forward to working closely to ensure our women businesses can access those programs, can connect, have awareness of how to leverage those resources to build their companies. I have had the honor of working very closely with the Women's Business Center in California, funding that network from the state of California. And, I think that, there's lots of opportunity to continue to improve that access point for women. I would serve as the voice of all small businesses, of course, in this role. And increasingly, that is a very diverse audience. And so I would really have the pleasure of working with organizations like Claudia's and others around the country to help ensure that our programs really fit the needs of all types of entrepreneurs that are starting and growing their businesses.
Well, thank you. From marginalized, underserved communities, minorities and women, to another area of particular concern because of acute need, and that's helping rural America. This is a long question, which I'm going to direct to both of you, but an important one. And it comes to us from Dave Hanna from Crete, Illinois. Director Guzman, let's start with you on this one. Again, a long question, but an important one. Can you address how funding can and will be directed to small businesses in small towns across America? Rural America is a greatly underfunded and underused asset. There are incredible opportunities in small towns across the United States, yet the vast majority of funding for small businesses has been directed to urban areas. Access to funding and a targeted effort in the rural communities of America can yield tremendous economic and social benefits and is sorely needed. Can you please talk about how you will move in this direction? Again, starting with you, Director Guzman.
Thank you. Thanks for the question, Dave. And I agree. I mean, California is an incredibly diverse state. We have a heavy rural population, and I've actually spent a majority of my time really focusing on regions rising and ensuring that all communities have access to resources. Especially in the far north areas around Paradise and Butte County, or around Fresno in the Central Valley, and those smaller, more agricultural rural communities. And I know how vital those small businesses are to those communities, not only because for all of us, they really define the fabric of our community. They're the meeting space, the community space, as well as giving us the products and services that we all need so much. And so our ability to help them survive during this pandemic, as well as thrive into the future, is highly critical. So I would look forward to definitely working with our rural partners across the country to ensure that there's access to programs and resources to help small businesses in those communities thrive, and look at opportunities for continued innovation and growth across the available resources that exist that are really serve those communities well.
Governor Raimondo.
Thank you. I think that was extremely well said, and I agree with it all. I would add just a few points. One is, I think it begins with recognition. As Commerce Secretary, the President-elect, I know, would like me to lead on this issue of competitiveness and what it means, moving forward on American competitiveness. In order to do that effectively, we have to take a regionally sensitive lens to economic development. Now, I'm up here in the Ocean State, and obviously what economic development up here is different than in rural Illinois. We are really leaning into offshore wind. But my point is, as Commerce Secretary, I am totally committed to making sure that we take a regional lens. What works in rural areas is different than coastal areas, is different than urban areas. And I'm going to be very serious about taking those differences into account. The second point would be broadband. And this is something that, as Commerce Secretary, I would like to use the tools in the toolbox of Commerce Secretary to enable rural broadband. It's important. We've seen, sadly, kids all around America struggle to maintain their education at home due to the lack of access to broadband. The same is true for businesses. So I think some of it is, as I said, begins with an awareness and a commitment to recognizing there are regional differences, and we have to be there for all Americans. And I will do that as Commerce Secretary, but some of it is just an enabling function. And broadband today is vital. It's the same as any other utility, water, electricity, et cetera, heat. And too many parts of rural America don't have what they need. And so as Commerce Secretary, I want to use efforts of the Commerce Department to really extend broadband to everywhere, including rural America.
That's a good segue by itself of a question submitted by Nate Tibbetts of Washington, D.C., who asked, can you talk about how the Biden administration plans to leverage investment in infrastructure, particularly digital connectivity and 5G, to create economic opportunities and drive job growth? And I'm going to add a second part of this. I would be fascinated by both of your responses to this. Why haven't we gotten the job done thus far on broadband? If we have been treated to any kind of a painful lesson about the harsh effects of not having uniform access, universal access to broadband, it has been during this period of time when so many students weren't able to fully participate in their education. But let's start with Nate's question. How are you going to leverage investments in this regard? And then if you would, please, give me some insight. Why is it that we've been talking about this for years and years and years, and we seem to only take incremental bites at it? Director Guzman, can we start with you, please?
We've experienced this as a huge issue in California. Of course, it's impacting education as our students are not able to access broadband and our businesses. I mean, we know that during this time, small businesses have increasingly relied on digitization, the e-commerce access, in order to sustain their revenue source. And with that huge pivot requires access to connectivity. So this, you know, this has definitely been a priority. There are, I mean, multiple reasons in terms of why, you know, why the, it's been limited, but I do believe wholeheartedly that there has been a shift and prioritization and, you know, all parties at the table in terms of private public sector engagement in order to solve this challenge that is limiting our small businesses and limiting our communities in terms of their access to resources and education. So I would look forward to partnering across across multiple agencies, across the administration, if confirmed, to ensure that the small business voice is at the table and the importance of broadband access for their increasing digitization, you know, is forefront in terms of the discussion around improving broadband.
Governor Raimondo.
So, Lieutenant Governor, I'm not sure I have the solution or the answer as to why we are where we are. But we are where we are, and we have to commit ourselves to moving forward more aggressively. As I said, the stories of being a governor during COVID over the past 10 months, the stories of children home alone trying to learn and unable to do that because of lack of access to, you know, reliable broadband or computer or technology are heart-wrenching. And so I think it's on all of us to use that as a real moral motivator to make sure that we bring broadband evenly and ubiquitously to every household and every business in America. That's just essential, you know, as we move forward. And that's going to be even more so when we move from 4G to 5G. We have to make sure it doesn't accelerate inequalities. So the president-elect is deeply committed to building back more equitably. You said it yourself in the introduction, equity is at the core of his economic agenda. Should I be confirmed, it will be at the core of my agenda. Equity will be at the core of everything I do as Commerce Secretary. And equity means equal access to things like broadband. It's just a, it's a table setter. And so and the reality, as the question says, is rural America has, we're not there yet, right? We are not there yet. And we need to be, there are a number of tools in the toolbox of the Commerce Secretary that I am still learning about that relate to broadband and the internet and wireless technology. And what I will say is that I'm committed to using them to bring about a more equal American economy, which means more equal access to broadband.
Governor, you've been a successful elected official for many years now. And we all know that oftentimes politics is about timing. Do you believe that in the wake of the COVID pandemic and the extreme problems that were exposed in full view of the lack of access to universal access to broadband, makes for a circumstance for this issue finally to be pushed forward significantly? Are we there yet, Governor?
I hope so. Yeah, thank you for the question. Listen, I hope so. I think so. Time will tell. I can tell you this. I think there's bipartisan support for the issue, which is helpful. I know that my Republican colleagues, Republican governors, are as passionate on the issue as Democratic governors. And to my mind, I think yes, I think so. The technology's there, you know, it's not a technological issue. It's on us. And I think this question, it's a question I get, you hear it all the time from small businesses. People want to compete, they want to work hard, but like I said before, this is a fundamental utility that's required. And I do think that this the time is now to move forward. And like I said, I do, you know, you see it in the president-elect's plans. I mean, I think there's bipartisan support and people recognize rural areas all across America have been left out.
Well, let's shift to an easier topic, the Affordable Care Act. Start with you, Director Guzman. This question comes from Lisa Sherritt from Dallas, Texas, who wants to know what your plans are for regulatory priorities related to the Affordable Care Act. Director Guzman.
Thank you. Well, we know healthcare is a top priority for small business owners, so not surprised by the question because, you know, for themselves, their families, and their employees, it's critical to have healthcare, especially in this time of the pandemic. So I'd welcome the opportunity to, partner across the administration on these priorities around healthcare to ensure that, small businesses are able to access it for themselves as well as for their employees. In the past, while I served as Deputy Chief of Staff at the Small Business Administration during the Obama administration, of course, the deployment of ACA was really critical and leveraging the networks to ensure that small businesses were aware, had technical assistance to be able to walk through, and access healthcare was a priority. And I know that small businesses need to be able to connect to those resources. I think that's fundamental across the board, and I say it repeatedly, but it is. I mean, you're that team that I referenced earlier that every small business needs. They don't necessarily have that insurance agent or banker or as well the lawyer at their fingertips to try to navigate all these issues. And so as much as we can participate in the complex issue of healthcare and accessing insurance to support our small businesses along with all the other issues they have to navigate, I'm looking forward to that opportunity if confirmed.
Follow-up question, if I may, Director. We hear a lot, we read a lot, there's even some scholarship on this, about how inhibiting to economic growth the lack of access to affordable and quality healthcare is. Not only is it a burden oftentimes disproportionately borne by people in the small business community, but it also has been argued that it inhibits people forming small businesses who may have salaried jobs, don't want to leave them, and the security of having affordable quality health insurance through their employer. How material of a factor do you think the lack of access to affordable quality health insurance is in economic growth, especially as it relates to small businesses?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the top expenses, and it does limit some families from being able to seek entrepreneurship, as is student loan debt and so many other factors that can limit our entrepreneurial growth and business dynamism. But I do feel that, as I said, it's one of the priority issues. It's always in the top three or top five of businesses in terms of the issues that they're facing. So I do believe it's definitely a priority that we need to address to make sure that we can control the cost. But on the other side of the equation, of course, is it's always the revenue side as well. So yes, there are expenses. We also need to always keep in mind that we need to provide opportunities for growth, grow the economy, recover to make sure that businesses can survive, build their cash flow from the revenue base.
Governor Raimondo, same question, your priorities at Commerce as they relate to ACA, and any insights you might have as a long-term governor as to what you observe relative to issue of access to affordable quality healthcare and the role of the ACA.
So I would say that access to high quality affordable healthcare is about as important as anything there is. Any parent of a small child who has to go to work in the morning and wakes up and finds out that their kid has an ear infection and they don't have access easily to take their child in to get seen and get the medicine they need knows how disruptive that simple and common healthcare condition is. So it's necessary. Access to high quality affordable healthcare is necessary for workers to be productive and to be secure. It's necessary for small businesses to be able to provide healthcare that doesn't break their bank, but so that their employees can be productive and secure. So it's very important. I will say here in Rhode Island, we are kind of the poster child in some ways for the Affordable Care Act working. 97% of kids in Rhode Island have healthcare, 90%+ of Rhode Islanders do. We have a well-functioning exchange when premiums are actually going down. I know that's not the case everywhere, and there's work to be done, But what I'm saying is when there is high quality, affordable healthcare accessible to all, it makes a huge difference. In commerce, obviously, I don't have obvious regulatory power or authority as it relates to healthcare. I would say my job and the way I would approach the issue is to be an advocate, to listen to the needs of small businesses around how the Affordable Care Act is working and how we can help them with healthcare, and to be your advocate in the administration. President-elect Biden's top healthcare priority is to strengthen and expand the Affordable Care Act. And I support that fully. Again, I've seen it work here in Rhode Island. So I'll do what I can to move that agenda. But as it relates to the folks on this call, I'll be your advocate because I know how hard it is when it doesn't work for your employees and for your businesses. And I know how great it can be when it does work. And so I think we have to stay at it.
Another question for both of you. This one comes from Graham Richard in San Francisco, who asked, what are your plans for building back better and creating clean economy jobs? Might we start with you, Director Guzman?
Thank you. Yeah, I know you heard from yesterday from President-elect Biden, as well as today from Congressman Richmond. I think, you know, overarching what's weighing on my mind is the critical first step is really response to this crisis. You know, we know that we need urgent and bold action to face this economic and health crises. I do serve in California on focusing both innovative startups as well as small businesses, broadly Main Street, everyday businesses. And the first thing is, you know, across the board is getting this pandemic under control. So I'm really pleased to see the President-elect's rescue package and the support that is intended for small businesses. And I bring that up just because along with the December COVID relief package with extended SBA PPP rounds, EIDL advance, you know, our Save Our Stages, our debt relief across the board, all of that relief and support for small businesses will also help in terms of innovative startups and innovation in the climate space as well, and small businesses being able to access resources to grow. I think that I'm pleased that the SBA has a strong Office of Investment and Innovation that really can focus on emerging industries and helping the United States continue to maintain its global leadership across these key sectors. And so within those America Seed Fund, as it's called, the Small Business Innovation Research Grants, across the investments and the capital that we try to use to seed these innovative startups in the climate space, along with in biotech and every other emerging sector that we want to focus on. I think there's a great opportunity to really empower those idea generators, those innovators and thinkers to be able to start and grow their businesses, commercialize their ideas in the climate space or any other. So I'm looking forward to, if confirmed, leveraging the SBA portfolio to really grow those critical industries like climate that we need to, you know, address some of the world's problems, and especially in California, where I'm seeing it firsthand in terms of responding to disasters, you know, the multiple fire season impacts we've had from disaster after disaster. I think it's critical that we prioritize the sector. So looking forward to that cross-agency SBIR portfolio and how we can help at the U.S. Small Business Administration if confirmed.
Governor Raimondo, before you answer that question, since this is our last, I do want to take the opportunity to encourage all of you who are listening to this to remind you that confirmation of presidential nominees is not automatic. It requires people being willing to stand up and speak out on behalf of those who have advanced their names. I simply cannot think of two people more qualified for the positions to which they have been nominated than Isabel Guzman and Gina Raimondo. We are indeed fortunate that they are willing to serve our nation in this regard. And I hope you will all make your views known in that regard. Governor Raimondo, to close us out, Department of Commerce role with respect to clean economy jobs.
First of all, thank you for that very kind and generous assessment. I think I can say thank you from Isabel and me. We appreciate your confidence, and we're excited to listen to the needs of the small business community and do our best to be an advocate. One of the biggest pieces of the Commerce Department is NOAA, which is the agency dealing with all things related to the ocean. Now, I'm biased because I am the governor of the ocean state, and we have 400 miles of coastline in Rhode Island, and we have led the nation in charging towards renewable energy, particularly offshore wind. But I'll tell you, we've created a lot of jobs, a lot of good paying jobs. And I would like to create the same kind of job opportunities for many millions of Americans in the blue economy. You know, it's not, we talk a lot about the green economy and green jobs, but there are a lot of blue economy jobs. There's an awful lot of undersea research and technology job opportunities. There are clean energy opportunities, and NOAA is extremely well positioned to unleash that job creation opportunity. So there are other ways, of course, in commerce. I will tell you, I've seen firsthand, one of the fastest growing parts of Rhode Island's economy is the green economy. They are, as I said before, they are good jobs. They are jobs that you don't need a four-year college degree to get. They're career jobs. And I'm going to focus on all of them. But again, I'm very excited to lean into what I'm going to think of as blue economy, ocean-related jobs, because that's a 40% of what Commerce Department does.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Director. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you, Congressman. And thank you, Rhett. This is Jim Doyle with Business Forward. Before we go, we're going to turn it over to Theo LeCompte, who's on the transition team for the Biden-Harris administration. And he's going to quickly review to go, some of the key points of the recovery proposal that President-elect Biden outlined yesterday.
Thank you so much, Jim. And thanks to Governor Raimondo and Director Guzman for doing this today, and Congressman Richmond. Really quickly at the end here, I just wanted to make sure everybody had seen and heard the rescue package that President-elect Biden put out last night. President-elect knows we need urgent and bold action to address health and economic crises that we're facing. And that's why you've seen him put out what we need to do to begin the process of rescue and recovery. We're in the middle of a dark winter as the virus is spreading uncontrollably, and more than 20 million Americans have contracted COVID-19, and more than 370,000 have died. So that's why President-elect Biden is laying out his aggressive two-step plan to first rescue us from the depths of the crisis and put America on the road to recovery. Part of those plans, we need aggressive action to speed up vaccinations and contain the virus. He talked a little bit about that last night, and you'll hear more from him about that today. But he knows that we cannot address the economic crisis we're facing now without confronting the virus, which continues to rage uncontrolled across the country. So that's why he's calling for sweeping measures funded by around $400 billion to contain the virus, starting with a national vaccination campaign to dramatically speed up the pace of inoculations, including by partnering with state and local governments and setting up community vaccination centers around the country. He also knows that we need immediate economic relief for the hardest hit Americans. So as part of the package, Joe Biden has been calling for sweeping measures to quickly get economic relief into the hands of Americans who have been hit hardest. The president-elect will finish the job to get Americans $2,000 in direct support, and he's going to extend and expand vital programs like emergency unemployment insurance, food assistance, and eviction moratoriums to help families struggling make it through these difficult times. He's also wants to make sure that this package includes support for struggling communities. Communities across the country are being crushed by this virus. So state and local essential workers are on the front lines for our vaccination programs to ensure they can do that critical job of vaccinating against the virus. President-elect is calling for $350 billion to help keep first responders on the job. And the president-elect will get aid to small businesses to help stores on main streets around the country stay open, keep their employees on payroll, and continue to serve a vital role in their communities. Lastly, you know, the president-elect talked about modernizing federal information technology to protect against future cyber attacks. In addition to the COVID-19 crisis, we've got a crisis when it comes to the nation's cybersecurity. The recent breaches of federal government data systems underscore the importance of strengthening our cybersecurity capabilities. And so that's why President-elect Biden is calling on Congress to launch an ambitious effort to modernize and secure federal IT and networks. And with that, we're just about at time, but I want to say thank you to all of you for joining, and talk soon.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle.
produced and engineered by Alexi Littman and Alex Pastanen. Special thanks to our Director of Programming, Jana Platt. Thanks for listening. See you next time.